You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life. Welcome to episode 38. I am your host, Mike Piccinato. And in today's episode, we will be interviewing some close friends of Stephen and Jenny Jones, a couple that Alyssa and I met several years ago. They were in Berlin, and we had an opportunity to sit down with them for our five-question series. Here's that interview now. I'm excited that today we get to go back to our five-questions series, and I have two special guests with me today. I have Marcus Dipsilas and his wife, Lauren Usherwood Dipsilas, joining today. And guys, why don't you just take a few minutes to introduce yourselves?
Sure, I'll go first. My name is Lauren, and I find myself in Berlin traveling, just taking in where I am because we have been traveling for quite a while. I grew up in the US. I grew up in Minnesota, and then I moved abroad, married a Malaysian man. And now I find myself back in Minnesota teaching. Probably think of more things to add that might become important as we continue.
Awesome. My name is Marcus. And I am Malaysian by nationality, a third culture kid by, I would say, enculturation. And met my wife, Lauren, at college in the U.S. We moved the day after we got married back to Malaysia. And then now we have just recently moved to the U.S. And I have been traveling for close to a month now, 3 weeks alone. And then this week, Lauren joined me in Basel. And here we are in Berlin.
Thanks for recording with me today. And I'm excited about it because you guys have what I find to be just a fascinating story. Your guys' lives are very interesting. And especially when we're talking about intercultural living and what it means to cross cultures, I think you guys have experienced it in both directions. So the five questions series, I ask people from a variety of backgrounds the same five questions as kind of the basic framework. And then we just see where the conversation takes us from there. And the first question is, what is a significant transition you have experienced?
Shall I start?
Sure.
I've recently come to accept that our life in and of itself is transition. Definitely there are seasons of, you know, actual transition where we are moving to a different place or transitioning from. But our life thus far together, and my life once I entered university, just had so much more change and transition than I thought a life could have. So some of the significant transitions would be, well, I should give some context. So I'm in my mid-20s. So I think generally when you are at this stage in life, your life does have a lot of transition, especially if you go to university and then you're, you know. After university, I transitioned to marriage. And then I transitioned to living in Southeast Asia from the U.S. And then recently, within the past year, I transitioned from Southeast Asia back to Minnesota.
I think it's interesting that you talk about the transitions you maybe anticipated when you were younger, there being more transition than you maybe originally anticipated. Because I think there are some of those transitions that people normally put on their list of things to check off: going to university, graduating, entering into a long-term relationship with somebody. Moving to other countries aren't always on people's transition lists.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's a different, I mean, it's cultural transition. It's also relational transition. I remember when I first moved to the US as a 20-year-old college freshman, one of the ways of realizing that I was in transition was, how do I communicate with friends back home? And that was, I think, the start of the age of WhatsApp. So I would talk to them through WhatsApp, whether it was WhatsApp calls or just texting on WhatsApp. But that was kind of the signifier or the reminder that I was in a different place, was I was no longer with them in person, and also our time difference made it impossible to have ongoing conversation. Like I would be waking up when they were going to bed, mm-hmm. or they were going to bed when I was waking up. Yeah. I just turned 30. And
today is day two.
Today's day two.
In this new decade.
Yeah. I've heard, I haven't personally experienced it yet, but I heard that you can't use the excuse, oh, but I'm in my 20s anymore once you hit 30.
Not honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I could go on pretending that I'm 29. Yeah, I think that to me is a significant transition, along with the cultural transition of moving back to the U.S. I think because when I was in my 20s, if I did something impressive, I was young and people would look at me and be like, wow, like look at this guy. He's in his early 20s, mid 20s, late 20s, and he's doing these things. And now that I'm 30, I'm like, well, maybe it's kind of expected from me to be doing something, or it's a tired excuse now to like be like, well, he's in his 20s. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see in the years to come or months to come what I can make out of that.
So you guys have both transitioned cultures. Mm-hmm. Initially, Marcos, you to the U.S. and then back to Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
Now back to the U.S.
In the
again.
Last 10 years, yeah, that's what's happened.
Yeah. And in the middle, you've added another cultural transition of a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, that's a lot of transition.
It is a lot of transition. But where would you rate maybe the difficulty of the transition? Because I think in both cases,
off the charts.
Yeah, at least we've experienced it, that you anticipate all the good things about the transition without anticipating the challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So where would you say, here's where marriage ranks in that. Was it easier to transition cultures than to transition into an intercultural marriage? Or is it all kind of the same? Or
that's a fascinating question for me, because
that's what I was gonna say.
Yeah,
that's a fascinating question. Oh, sorry, I just hit the table. Go ahead.
So I like to think of myself as an interculturalist. I studied intercultural studies in college. That was my major and degree. I like to think that I have the tools, or that I have the frameworks. Marriage is a whole other ballgame. I think maybe akin to how therapists will say that their spouses do not like to be psychoanalyzed or walked through. And I like, the conflict is the conflict. Don't try to manage your spouse if you are in a people managing kind of field. I would say this, it's the same in our marriage, where it's not like the skills haven't come in handy, but I don't use them the same way. So there's almost like a separation to me between our intercultural marriage and how I navigate crossing a different culture. Mm-hmm. Because with my wife, it's closer to home. I make a lot of cultural blunders. I think that's important to state, that no matter how good someone is at going across culture, you're still going to make mistakes. And I make those mistakes sometimes boldly, because I think it's better on the onset to make them. And then if I need to be corrected, then I think it's different in marriage. I don't enter marriage with that perspective. I'm going to make the biggest mistake I can right now and then work out the details. Like that's not how I've approached. At least that's not how I think I've been approaching marriage. Yeah. So it's almost like in my mind, there's a compartment that, maybe not a compartment that typical Westerners are familiar with in terms of compartmentalizing thoughts, but maybe a thinner, maybe a veil of sorts that give a little separation between my regular intercultural transition and my intercultural marriage.
Well, my transition into marriage, and then my first significant cross-cultural transition were all mixed together and was at the same time.
Because the day after, right?
Marcus and I got married and then we flew to Malaysia the next day. Our friends drove us to the airport and my wedding dress was packed in my carry-on suitcase and away we went, which at that point was the best decision that we could have made. But it also meant that there was a lot to process and it was all mixed in together. So at the same time of, you know, processing the loss of I'm no longer single, now I'm married. What does this mean? And I'm moving to a country I've never lived in before. And my husband is expressing himself in a way that is very unfamiliar to me. And I have family that I don't know. And I'm stared at a lot. Like there's so much to unpack. But looking back, I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. It just is. I think I've come to the point in my life where it's not like ease or challenge. It just is. And what do I need in this moment? Can I change something? You know, are there tools that I need? Is there a book that I need? Do I just need to call a friend? Do I need to go for a walk? Like, what can I do? What agency do I have in this moment? And then what things are just, well, this is just the way it is for now. And it maybe won't always be this way, but I'm going to pivot or I'm going to accept this. And the other language I had the other day, I realized it because I thought, man, my life has so much beauty. Like the things that I have been able to see and experience is incredible. Incredible. And I'm so grateful and so privileged. And that only comes because of the pain. My life has a lot of pain. Everybody does. But to the degree that I have experienced amazing beauty, I have also had to accept pain and loss that some of it I don't even have words for and some of it is not seen because of that interculturalness and transition to my life. So I think that's the piece of it. That's how I'm kind of framing it currently in my life. So it's not necessarily ease or challenge, but great pain and great beauty.
What about the transition back? Because it's one thing when you go to Malaysia with your Malaysian husband, and now you're trying to figure out, well, my goodness, is this because Marcus is now my husband that I'm experiencing him differently, or because he's in Malaysia, or what are the challenges here? How have you seen that now that you've moved back to the US as well? Has there been another shift?
That's a good question. I think, honestly, because I feel like I know my husband now compared to when we first had our, you know, flying the day after we got married. You don't know each other when you're newlyweds. You think you do. Mm-hmm. You don't know anything. Let's just be honest. You don't know anything about anything. You don't know how hard it's going to be, but you also don't know, like, it's worth it. No, it's so worth it. So I think because I know Marcus now, there's not been like huge things in our transition that have come up. I'm like, oh, yep. It feels more familiar to me now. But would you say the same?
We've also been very intentional about, I want to say meeting in the middle, but then also hearing the other person out. I think the goal of intercultural transition or marriage isn't to, I was A, and now I'm going to become B, right? It could be A plus B, could be A to the power of B. Like you still maintain or retain who you are, especially if the transition goes well. You maintain that really well. You retain that part of yourself. You don't lose that part of yourself. Then now you also have an extension. And I think for us, we did a lot of work to hear the other person out, even when the conclusion for ourselves was, yeah, your point still doesn't make any sense to me. And that was fine, and has been fine to some degree, where it's like, no, like I don't have to make Lauren Malaysian.
And I don't have to make Marcus American.
But that's kind of what I'm saying, right? Like Lauren now has access to the Malaysian part of me. Through very intentional work on both sides, she sought after that part of me and I had the freedom to express it. Mm-hmm. And even with her, to express it with her, even though I'd never done that before, there was a part of me in America that had to be dormant, like certain styles of humor, certain ways of expression, just because the cultural references were different. Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, humor is a big thing. So when I don't have access to that part, I need to find something else, or I need to, which is, I think, how I learned how to be funny. I had to learn how to be funny to non-Asian people so that I could access humor. And now I'm grateful for it because I feel like I'm funny in multiple cultures. And that's an important thing to have. Just being able to be that with Lauren in my home area, my home region, there was a lot of work that went into that. And I don't want to minimize the work, because that's how we have gotten to where we are now, I think.
We're spending a long time on this question, and I think it's good. Because I think that there are often the attitudes that, well, I just am who I am. And when I get into a new culture, people need to accept who I am, which can be a very arrogant way of taking yourself into a different culture without realizing that, well, you said there are certain parts of me that have to go dormant. And maybe that's even a dormant until I learn how does humor work here,
right.
And then these parts can work again. We can't always force our culture.
Mm-hmm.
When we move to Berlin, and you have to learn the language, and you have to learn how things work, and you have to learn how culture functions, and then you can begin to see those parts. Like preaching in German is not just learning how to preach in a different language, it's also preaching in a way that's culturally appropriate. And that takes time to learn before I feel like, oh, now I can function in this way. That's different in a marriage. And it's different when you take your marriage intercultural, because now all of a sudden parts of you that were dormant are awake again. But at the same time, parts of Lauren are going dormant because now she's in a different culture. And so learning about each other, and that had to be an adventure. Yeah.
Can I add some more to this? Okay. I had actually forgotten for a while about this concept that I kind of unpacked and discovered while I was studying at Oxford. But it came back recently, maybe within the last year in our marriage, and it has been so helpful to me. Funnily enough, it's actually something that the very much single theologian and philosopher Søren Kierkegaard talked about. And I feel like it maybe came from his Works of Love book, but I can't remember. But he talks about how marriage can be essentially before you are lovers or before you are married, you are firstly a brother and sister in Christ. And to understand that your primary function as a brother and sister in Christ in a marriage is to be pointing the other person back to God. So, you know, we can talk more about our faith, you know, as it pertains to what I'm sharing. But oftentimes in marriage, you know, as I learned, okay, what does it mean to be married? How do I change? How do I stay still, Lauren? How do I ask for what I need? What do I need? There's so much learning that has happened for me and for Marcus, but sometimes I got really stuck in the marriage piece, and it has been so helpful to remember that before Marcus is my husband, he's my brother. So Søren Kierkegaard he paints this metaphor of a play. We are in this play, so picture yourself, you know, on stage, and sometimes we forget our lines, and we need help. We need a prompt to remember our lines. So the role of a husband or a wife is not to fix the problem, necessarily, but to show the card with your lines on it and to give you that little prompt. And it's almost like you're reminding the person and pointing them back to Christ, but also giving them a tool or a reminder, encouragement of how to be in the play again by giving them the lines that they forgot. And that has been so helpful for me, because in moving to Malaysia, I got to know Marcus, and I'm so much better equipped now to help him in this play of life when he forgets his lines.
Which
now
is
I know. Now I can better help him. I can better prompt him. And he has seen me at, you know, when I'm completely undone in cultural transition, and I feel like I can't function and I can't function, to see a person at that low point and to know how they need to receive those lines to keep going in the play. That metaphor has been so helpful for me. And it's also given me space like, oh, okay, before I'm married to Marcus, I'm also a daughter of God, and it's okay to ask for what I need. And I need to, because I need to show up fully as my own person before I can show up as a partner in this journey, in this play. I got to stay with the same metaphor, stay a partner in the play.
It takes a lot of work, though. First of all, to say, is this my interpretation of the play, or is this the play that's really written? Am I reminding somebody of the lines the way I think they should be interpreting them, or am I giving them the freedom to act out that role?
So
we're fellow actors. I'm not the director of your role in the play. Yeah, and it's important to remember that position as well.
No, I think that's part of figuring it out. It's also the perspective that you take when you enter this particular role. Let's run with the play. Like when you get the script and you're like, sure, I'll do it. And then you're figuring out how do I be this person and be true to this character and be true to what this person would do and how they would do it. And then to be assertive with that, right? Like those are things definitely that come to mind, because you are not the only person in the play. The other actors influence how your character changes. And I think in marriage too, there are times that I'm used to something that I've grown up in my culture to do. So I am very good at snap judgments. I make very good, quick judgments because I spend a lot of time before those judgment decision moments come, like getting to know things. So I feel like when an issue with travel or something comes up, like, okay, I'm thinking forward, I'm making judgments and I'm doing all these things. But even though I'm good at it, I don't think humans are created to be on all the time. And that is my version of being on, is quick judgment. And then here comes my wife, who is very present, and I look at her life. She's present with her emotions, she's present with her thoughts. And I then reflect and realize sometimes I don't even know what I feel about something till days later. And that is not what I want for myself, right? So then I begin to shift and change. And, you know, the last 3 weeks, I think about 2 weeks out of the 3 weeks, I've literally just been on trains going through different journeys of my own in Switzerland and Germany and journaling. That's not something I would do. It's something I picked up now. It's because of who I'm married to. And I'm realizing I like this part of myself. It's something that has become crucial to my character, crucial to the element of the story that is being told through my point of view, that now I have this access to parts of me that I couldn't unlock until this intercultural marriage happened. Because, you know, I don't think I would be in this position if I were to have married someone from my culture. We would have very similar blind spots.
I think what I hear you saying is that there are these roles, and it's not like, I mean, these are roles that God has written specifically for us. It's not like he's asking us to become someone we're not. Mm-hmm. This is the role that we've written. And then there's interpretations of the role. And sometimes, especially if we live a very monoculture life, mm-hmm. our interpretation of that role is very monoculture.
Yeah.
And the more experiences we have, sometimes the more people we come across that mm-hmm. also feed into how we interact with one another, the broader that role can become for us. And maybe the more full.
The more robust.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm an Enneagram type 3, so portrayal, projection, and staying true to the plot is something I very much value. And in that, to have a perspective that there's freedom. You know, I'm not tied to who I am till the day I die. And I think that's, you know, to bring up what you had mentioned earlier, sometimes we enter a culture and we want to be seen, we want to be heard, and we think the way to do it is to be assertive. Now, I come from a very accommodating culture, so my strategy is different. I'll assert my culture in ways that could be appealing to someone. Yeah, I read recently that the reason why there's so many Thai restaurants in the world is that the Thai government decided that the best way for people to find Thai culture appealing was through food. And so, you know, there is a program where they support these restaurants being opened all over the world, the Thai restaurants, because if they can have little embassies in people's stomachs, you know, everyone would love the Thai people. And I think that that's kind of my style. Being from, you know, I live an hour and a half away from Thailand. Being from that region, that's my strategy. That's not always everyone's strategy. So
you cooked lunch for us today. That means right now I have a little Marcus embassy inside my stomach.
Right. And when you think of me and when I hurt you in the future, you think of me, you will also have that memory of this really delicious lunch that we have. So how could he do this to me? But good food, man.
Going back to your illustration, Lauren, from Kierkegaard, it's not even, I am telling you what your lines are as much as it is, I'm holding up a picture of your role.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
And letting you live up to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I do.
It's not about you.
Right.
It's really just about the other person before God.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you help them? How can you help them in their journey?
That takes humility on both sides, though.
To receive help and
yeah,
help?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But also, as you're holding up the picture of that role, recognizing that, wow, okay, my own perception of that role is also being confronted. So is it, as I'm reminding him of his role, is it because this is what I think he should be? Or is this because what God has called him to be? And that takes a lot of work, too.
It also takes a lot of work not to be smug.
Because
when I'm reminding you of what you're supposed to be doing, what I think you're supposed to be doing, I can be like, now, remember, you know, like that is the inclination or the temptation of the human psyche or human position, kind of to be, oh, now I'm instructing you. So, you know, if there's insecurities about being inferior, they come out at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I try to enlarge myself or make myself look bigger or sound more impressive.
Well, that's where we're going to bring today's episode to a close. We didn't do such a great job of covering five questions in today's five question series. We only made it through question one, but we make up for that next week. We'll finish all four of the remaining questions with Marcus and Lauren. Thanks again for joining us. And as every week, if you have questions for us, you can interact by sending emails to podcast@envisionberlin.com or by joining our Discord server. And you can do both of those by clicking the links that you'll find in the show notes. I'll also put some social media links for Marcus and Lauren in the show notes. You might want to check those out and have a chance to see some of the projects that they've been involved in over the years. Two side notes as we bring today's episode to a close. The first is that we founded Envision Berlin just over a year ago. On April 11th, we had our first meeting for our nonprofit organization here in Berlin, and we officially launched in the month of April last year. So it's exciting to have been able to be around now for a full year. Some of you have been following us for the entire time we've been around, and we want to say thank you for your support. And for those of you who are new, thank you also for being a part of what we're doing here. The second note is that we just added new staff. Justin and Brittany Siemens have joined the team in Berlin, and we're excited to have them and their two daughters here with us. Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of Envision Berlin e.V. and is produced, recorded, and edited at Sprig, Envision Berlin's creative space. Podcast music is by Mike Picanato.